Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. This is Chet Haas from the Android Toolkit team. Tor is not here, so I'm doing this on the slide. Don't tell him. And today I'm talking to
Kyle Lampert
from
Google News.
Android. Okay, so I have known Kyle for the past couple of years at least, at which point you were working on Newsstand.
Yes.
Which was an Android news app, and now you work on Google News, which is a different Android news app. And at the same time, I also have an app on my phone, a vestigial app called News and Weather.
Ah.
So, if you could like paint a news history for Android, I would love to understand.
Totally. So, until I.O. this year, Google had a couple news apps. There was Newsstand and News and Weather. And, you know, we kind of recognized that we want to go bigger on news as a company. And that's why we decided to relaunch the Google News brand and combine the two products, News and Weather and Newsstand, into one cohesive offering.
Okay, so what was the difference between News and Weather and Newsstand then? Actually, why were there two separate apps to begin with,
yeah,
and what was different about them that you needed to combine?
So, I think that the apps kind of had a history that was baked in as part of Android. You know, many years ago, there was Google News on Android, happened to be News and Weather. Newsstand came about when Play Magazines and Currents, yes, there was a time when there were three news apps, Play Magazines and Currents merged into Google Play Newsstand. So Google Play Newsstand was more about purchasing and magazine reading, but there was also a feed of news content.
Okay.
So we kind of looked at these news products and said, wow, it makes a lot of sense if we would merge these and kind of take the best of both worlds. And the Google News brand seemed like the strongest place to do that.
Okay, so in the merge, what was it you were taking from the experience from News and Weather? Did you take Weather?
We did. We actually had Weather already in Newsstand, believe it or not.
Well, you had Weather and you had News.
Yeah, we had a lot of these things. The one thing that we took from News and Weather was the Google, some of the things that people loved about Google News, which is you can dive into stories and get more coverage on those stories.
Yeah.
So we took that and we turbocharged it.
Okay,
and
in
we used lots of, so this is not particular to Android, but for the product, we use lots of machine learning and AI techniques to better help people understand what a story, the full coverage of a story. And we call the feature full coverage.
Okay, there's a little item below the stories that says, you know, for more context, or is that full coverage?
Full coverage, that's the one,
okay.
Yeah. And a fun little icon next to it.
Okay. All right, so then they're combined,
yeah.
And then we come to the app that launched, what, a couple of months ago?
Yeah, feels like a couple months ago. I think it's only about a month now, right?
Oh, really? Was
yeah.
at Google I.O.?
It was at I.O., yeah.
Okay, I guess I saw early versions of it internally for some amount of time.
You had the pre-releases, all of them.
I do. All right, so what is special about that product then, or that Android app?
You know,
I should point out too, like you're the lead of the Android specific portion of this thing. I can't remember if
yes.
you said that. So you're the knowledgeable person to be speaking on that.
Yes, and hopefully I can kind of impart some wisdom on the crowds of the things that we did that I thought worked really well.
Yep.
So far the response to the app has been great. There's definitely a lot of feature requests coming in, and we knew that would happen.
Yep.
It's going to be a long journey for us. You know, this is just kind of the first iteration of what we imagine to be hopefully a really strong offering in the news space,
yeah,
and something that people really love and want to come back to on a daily basis.
And they're probably looking forward to having a different app next year for
yeah.
news content.
Fingers crossed that won't happen. I think
yeah.
we'll, you know, this feels like a really good start for us, and we have lots of great ideas about how to make it better.
Yep. Okay, so what do you think are some of the things that distinguish the app that you like? So you worked on Newsstand, which was also sort of a big step forward, I think, in terms of UI richness. Like one
yeah.
of the reasons that I knew you from working on that was you were a heavy user of transitions early on.
Yes.
I think, like before they were released, you were playing with activity transitions.
Activity transitions, yeah.
Which are not the most trivial thing to get a handle on. And just the UI experience, I thought, you know, compared to News and Weather, like I like News and Weather, it does what it says it does in the name of the app, but the experience of going through the feed of Newsstand, I think, was a lot richer and more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I see similar elements in Google News.
I've always been a big believer in products that just feel really good to use. And the feed is the central part of the news app. It's a central part of lots of apps these days, but
yeah.
especially for news. You know, when we go about to think, you know, what belongs in a feed and how should it act and how should it behave, I can't even tell you how many different feeds we tried until we settled on the one that we ended up with in Newsstand and now in Google News. Two completely different feeds, by the way.
Interesting. Actually, can you help me understand what you mean by feed? Because I think of a feed as like there's a scrolling list of content, but
yeah.
You feel that there are different types of feeds. So I'm obviously thinking too vaguely about this.
To the extent that the composition of the feed has so many different permutations and options, you know, what we found is even the slightest design changes of the article cards could have huge differences on how we felt coming back to the app day after day. And you know, it's not hard to use a news app every day. So the team is always using it constantly, multiple times a day. So what we would do is we'd make a tweak and we'd live with it for a day or two.
Right.
And all these unexpected things would kind of come out of it. So what would happen is we'd go and look at the feed as a whole. How is it working, right? Does it feel like something I want to come back to? Is it fun to use? Is it quick? Is it fast? And all of these variables, really, there's so much that go into it. So we tried a bunch of different things, you know, months and months of iteration until we finally landed on something where we said, this is good. This feels really good.
Which it does, but can you give me examples of things that did not feel as good?
There was a time where we had a lot of heaviness, visual heaviness in the feed. Continuity I found, or we found as a team, was really important. Kind of the cadence of going through the feed. So if you have too many different types of elements, kind of from a visual or UX point of view, fighting against each other, what you'll find is, first of all, your performance suffers because you can't effectively recycle or as effectively recycle those views.
Yep.
You're inflating more views than you have to.
Yep.
And you're probably doing a bunch of overdraw if you have a lot of visual heaviness.
Yep.
So I ended up working with our UX leads and seeing how can we turn some of this down and also make it a little bit more predictable. Give the feed a cadence so that when you're scrolling from item to item,
it's gonna be image, headline, image, headline.
And it just feels that the mental model and the mental load of having to consume that goes way down.
Yeah.
And also the load on the CPU and the GPU goes way down too, which I'm a big fan of.
Right, interesting. And a fair amount of, like, it's not too much white space, but it feels, definitely feels not cluttered.
Yes.
Right? There's enough mental space too between the items that you can sort of parse each one as it goes.
Yeah.
More blink tags though. I think you need more blink tags. Those are really powerful.
The scrolling marquee, I'm a big fan of as well, so we might bring that back.
Actually, you have it already, because if you get on one that's actually a video part, video content, then you see their scrolling marquee.
Yeah.
So if you could put that in a marquee, oh,
wow.
Heaven.
Marquee inception, okay.
Yeah.
I'll add it to the roadmap.
Excellent. Okay, so that's the feed itself. How about some of the other rich elements? Or so there's a couple of things that spring to mind when I think about an application like that. One is, how do you achieve the richness that you need, you know, as you transition from, you know, this to that, or fade things in because you have content that's coming in asynchronously or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the other is the performance. You mentioned this already, like, how do you keep it from janking when there is so much rich content coming in all the time and the user is moving things often on screen constantly?
Yeah. A lot of work is the short answer.
Overclocking the CPU.
Of course, you overclock, right? There's a little a screw on the back, and if you turn that a bit tighter, just the phone goes wild. It's great.
Okay.
So let me start with, I want to start with one particular element that we have in the feed, which is probably the richest element in the app. And it also has to be in the feed, and so it affects scrolling performance. And we call it the newscast. And the newscast is this horizontally scrolling, auto-playing type of carousel. It almost looks like an auto-playing video. And sometimes there are actually auto-playing videos within it. But the newscast is meant to take a story and give you, you know, say 5 to 7 different perspectives on it from different sources. Maybe a tweet or a quote that was important in the story. And we wanted it to be so that when you scroll to the newscast, you land on it and you can just kind of sit back and consume it. So we'll try to kind of tell you the story right in line without having to go in any further. And if you're interested, then tap in one of the articles and really dig in.
So is this related to the related content thing that we were talking about before? Because I'm not sure I've seen this element. I've just been scrolling the feed vertically.
If you're scrolling the feed vertically, you probably are seeing it. The best way I can describe it is it looks a little bit different than the other cards, and it has a small footer that says view full coverage. But as you land on it, it does kind of autoplay from from story to, or from article to article.
Oh, so right. Okay, so the let the record show that I'm looking at the app right now with Kyle. So there, you're actually scrolling as in. I've seen the fading in of more text.
Yeah.
But I haven't noticed the like paging in of other articles. So that's distinguished. Does every article then have one of those things?
So not every article does. Some are just, they stand on their own weight.
Yeah.
But when we do have enough information about a story as a whole to give you multiple perspectives on it, or at least sources to tell you what's going on, we piece those together in this element that we call a newscast. And the implementation of this is actually a horizontal recycler view within the vertical recycler view.
Okay, so it's a good thing that we got that working. Okay.
It is a great thing we got that working, because that's what unlocked this experience for us.
Interesting. Okay.
We did a couple tricks with the recycler view to make sure that it was performant. One thing that can be easy to miss is that if you don't share view pools between the two recycler views, that is the outer recycler view and the inner recycler view, the next time I get to one of these inner horizontal recycler views, it's going to have to go and inflate those subviews again.
Yeah.
Better if when I go and detach the first one that we saw, put it in the view pool, and then when the next one comes back, take those views and they're ready to go. Just rebind them.
Okay. And that's APIs that we offer, or this is a hack around what we offer?
All what you offer, yeah. You did the hard work, we just kind of plugged into it.
Okay. And are you doing custom animations for those things?
Yes. So I actually worked with some people on your team on getting these animations to work.
Yeah.
So you'll notice when this text comes in, it fades in line by line.
Yeah.
And you'll also notice that there is this kind of cutout background drawing on it. So we were able to use the almost exclusively the spannable stylings of text and run an animation where we would just figure out, all right, this line starts here and here, let's add a span there, so on and so forth for all lines of the text, and then gradually run animations that were staggered to give that effect that the text would fade in from line to line.
Okay, so why did it need to be a spannable instead of a text view or separate text views? Separate chunks of just strings, right? What I'm seeing now is just strings on the screen.
Yeah, so this is just one text view,
with
one string, and we use spans for the styling. The reason we didn't want to use four separate text views is you do incur some performance hit on the measurement and the layout of the four.
Yeah.
So we found this was a bit better on perf.
And the spannables allow you to break it into the separate chunks. You're also styling different because you have the background on it as well, right?
Is that
separate? Or are you drawing like, you know, canvas draw rectangle?
Yes. The background is yet another span that provides its own style.
Okay.
So we'll go through each line and it'll get the background span, it'll get an alpha span, which will simply modulate the alpha from 0 to 100 as it animates. And then we kick the whole thing off and we get this nice animation.
Other animations, or I guess you're not really doing the, you know, deleting and adding items, right?
Not really. So you'll notice as the background stays as these scroll side to side, and again, this isn't going to come over on audio, but the trick that we used here is there's actually a background view that is not a recycler view.
Yeah.
It just has a couple image views, and it's listening for scrolls on the recycler view that's sitting on top of it. So there's kind of a foreground layer and a background layer. The background layer is just listening for changes, and when it sees a change, it asks for the next item in the adapter and does a little animation to fade the images in and out.
Okay.
And that gives the sense that, you know, these things are just a little bit different than a regular carousel.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the text on top looks like overlay text on top of the overall feed as opposed to locked with that image.
Right, exactly.
So that's not an item animator, that's just an animation that's happening on the content as the item is being scrolled.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
All right. Wow. Okay, so that's one element of performance that would certainly bog you down. What about when you're actually scrolling the feed? Right, like that's a huge problem to solve. So back in the day, G Plus solved that problem by having, you know, basically colors. Right. So as the feed was flinging, then they would just paint a random color in those squares and then fade it in when it eventually arrived.
Yeah, so I think what we found here is that SysTrace was our best friend.
Oh, and great, okay.
We got so much great insight from what was actually happening by just continually SysTracing and adding in more more custom markers to find out, you know, when we hit this certain type of card, it feels like the app kind of locks up a little bit. It feels like we're hitting jank. And we could go in and very tactically add some measurement around those types of elements, whether it was the inflation or the binding, and just figure out, you know, over time, is it the binding? Is it the inflation? Is the view too complex? Is it the measurement?
Yeah.
And that really helped us zero in on some of the issues. There wasn't just one. It was more like 100,
yeah,
right? And we had to go in and kind of address each one individually.
Do you have any insight for, I'll be selfish here and say, is there anything we could do to actually fix it at the platform level, or was it app specific?
So one thing that you guys did that I absolutely loved was the async inflation.
Okay.
That was huge for us.
Okay.
This is the Recycler View prefetch API, which I believe if you're using a linear layout manager, it just works out of the box.
Okay.
I'm sorry, there's two different things.
Yeah, there's async inflator, which is a support library thing, I think.
That's right.
And then Recycler View prefetch came in a year ago-ish.
Yes. So I'm sorry, I'm merging the two into one, but those were probably the two tools that helped us the most. So let me talk about async inflator first. Not all views out of the box will work with the async inflator, but
it's kind of why we don't push it too much,
yeah,
because you may trip yourself.
Yeah. It'll let you know when it's not working. But you do have to very carefully tune if you want to use it as a look ahead type of mechanism. And that's what we did. For the most part, it doesn't kick in all that much. But if you do like a really hard fling,
yeah,
it will be looking ahead and saying, does this view exist in the view pool yet? If it doesn't, inflate it on a background thread. And when that inflation's done, put it in the view pool.
Okay, so let me stop you there. You're talking, there's a difference between views and content. Like, I think the trivial approach to this is whenever you get a new piece of content, you inflate that, but you're relying heavily on view pools. So when you say a new view, that's like a new view type that is no longer in the pool yet.
Correct. It's either not in the pool or there's so many on screen that the pool just happens to be,
I see,
there's nothing left in the pool.
So what are the types of views that you have sitting in the pool? Text view we talked about, you have image views or some custom view to represent the image?
So the entire aggregate article card view sits in the Recycler views view pool. So these, you know, we've scrolled a little bit, so these regular article cards happen to already be in the pool. But if we were to hit something new, you know, here's an element. This view is a completely different type that we haven't seen yet.
Okay. So then it's not a standard format. It's based on what the content that the article had. What's different about that content that we're looking at on the card from the cards that preceded it?
Yeah, so these just happen to be a different content type, and it's prescribed that, you know, we know that when we cluster them together like this, we're going to want a smaller treatment. And what that translates to in the Android world is just a different XML layout.
Okay.
So the view pool is keyed by the layouts, the layout types.
Okay.
And, you know, we have a certain number, a finite number of them.
Right.
But it is possible that if you're scrolling quickly, we just haven't seen that view type yet. We want to get it in the view pool.
Okay.
Before the UI thread has to go and inflate that, before the Recycler View does.
Okay, so that, I was talking to another app developer about their feed, and the problem they had with that approach was there was basically an infinite number of view configurations that they may have, and so they had a really hard time with that approach because, well, this particular element may have a different setup, and then the one after that does too, and so they would have to keep so many of these around that it ended up being an issue.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you have... like how many different types of configurations can you have?
Maybe 10.
Right. So then there's a max of those times the number that you want in the cache, right?
Exactly.
So then it's more approachable. So just the fact that your content is so predetermined and regular helps you have that as a workaround.
Right. And that does make it easier to make it more performant, right? And this was one of the things that very early on in development, I kind of helped our UX colleagues understand this. Hey, if we can limit the permutations of view types we have, of configurations of these article views, then we can do some really great stuff to make sure that this thing is really buttery smooth and scrolling.
Right, which is nice because like that's the ideal of development, I think, with UX is being able to iterate with them and clearly explain the constraints that they can then help design around.
Yep.
Because it's still a mobile device with a limited battery.
It is.
So.
Yep.
There was something related to that, and it's gone. No,
so the prefetch also was really good. We just wanted to see how good is it, right? How much is it helping us? And especially for the horizontal recycler views, the embedded recycler views, if we had turned that off or had done something to break it, I wish I could remember exactly what the breakage was. And maybe I'll have to get back to you on that. But I do remember, you know, we saw crazy performance increase just with the prefetch enabled, which it is by default.
Right. So is that the combination of prefetch plus async layout?
So independent of async layout,
yeah.
What we saw is if we had turned off prefetch just to see how much is it helping us, the jank went up considerably.
Okay. I guess what I was trying to ask was, what is it you were doing in prefetch?
So the prefetch mechanism that specifically Linear Layout Manager has enabled is that if the UI thread, I believe, is if there's gaps in the work,
yep.
So if it's idle enough, it'll go ahead and a couple items in the future inflate and bind those for you and
right.
put them in the view cache,
right.
I think, which is different than the view pool. So I'm a little fuzzy on the exact implementation, but we did kind of say thanks, Chet and team, for that one, because it really helped us a lot.
Right. Give credit where credit's due. That's Chris Craik that did that.
That's right. That was Chris.
There's a Medium article about that as well.
Yeah. Really great feature.
Okay. That's nice to hear. Yeah. So the prefetch is, we're starting to see more benefit from having the separate render thread. To some extent, it's a serial process, even though it's a separate thread, because UI thread has to finish its work and then sync with render thread that then renders all of that stuff. But at that point, the UI thread is just sitting there and is available to do something else because it's done with all the drawing, and that's where they insert the prefetch.
Very cool.
So it's good to hear that it's working.
Yeah, it is.
So were those the main elements for getting the jank down?
Yeah. The other one that we have, if you use the app, you'll notice there's lots of video. And the video really adds to the richness. Some people don't like it. You can always turn it off in settings. But I'm a big fan of the video content. I find that it helps me kind of more quickly consume the news when the videos are spot on, and usually they are. But video is quite heavy. It's heavy in a lot of ways. It's heavy because the rendering itself is heavy. It's a tax on the GPU.
Yep.
It can be taxing on the CPU because you're downloading all this content, even if it's not on the, I would really hope it's not on the UI thread, but it's still taxing on you on the CPU. So we looked at a lot of different models for how to play and pause and do the autoplay in the collection.
Yeah.
And I think what we settled on is that we really want to wait until the scroll is completely settled and then decide what is the right view to hit play on and then start playback of that view.
Okay, so just trying not to do too much at the same time.
Yeah.
Seems reasonable. I would assume there's also a hit, like if you're playing video, there's going to be a creation of a surface view, right? Which tends to be expensive. That's another thing to not do at the same time.
Yes, and the reason that we don't suffer from that too much is that we cache the views pretty aggressively.
Oh, okay.
So there's only one layout type really that will have that video player. And because we have a view pool kind of filled with it, and we're trying to inflate it ahead of time, we're pretty much guaranteed that we'll have one and we don't have to create it on the UI thread.
Okay.
When the user scrolls a new one on screen.
Right. So you mentioned off-thread downloading of images and videos, which can be extensive and painful.
Yeah.
What is it you use to do that? Like, what's the approach? What's the pattern? Or what are the libraries that you use?
So we have kind of a homegrown solution.
Okay.
It's very similar to, it predated, but it's very similar to the principles in Glide.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Glide. If I was going to start from scratch building an app today, Glide's in there no matter what.
Okay.
I don't want to go into too much detail about what we're doing great,
sure.
Because honestly, it's like, go use Glide.
Yeah.
They've got everything figured out perfectly. For the most part, the patterns that we're using are recycle bitmaps. So if you're not going to use Glide, the things that I'd recommend are recycle your bitmaps as much as you can.
Yeah.
If you can work with your UX to make sure that you have a finite number of sizes of bitmaps too,
yep.
That really helps. If you look at the app again, you'll notice that from article to article, the image sizes are actually almost identical.
Which actually contributes to the experience you were going for anyway, which is have things be consistent in the UI.
Exactly. So that consistency also buys us bitmap recycling,
yep.
Pooling. And creating a bitmap, allocating a bitmap hurts you in a couple ways. Hurts you on memory. Potentially hurts you on CPU if you're not doing it in the right place. but it is still load for the CPU. So we tune that pretty aggressively to make sure that we, as much as possible, could recycle our bitmaps.
Okay. And when I was talking about patterns, I was also talking about, so how do you get yourself off thread and then back on thread when the content is ready? Is that all part of your library, I assume?
Yeah, so we rely heavily on Guava and Futures.
Okay.
So we're not using RxJava.
Yeah.
I do like it. It's a great library. But we happen to kind of start out with with Guava as our base.
Yeah.
And migrating off of that would have been kind of too much pain.
Right. I've also heard with Rx, like, so many people like it. It's really powerful, but you do sort of jump into a new mental model and maybe a rewrite in the process, right? Just because it's large and dominant in your application.
Yeah. Definitely something that I would look at if I was starting from scratch.
Yeah.
But for us, you know, the Guava stuff is great. It allows us to kick something off onto a different thread.
Yep.
We have a future. When the future completes, we can ask for it to be delivered on the main thread.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, the future has gone through a number of transformations where first we go to network, and then we come back and decode it into a bitmap, hopefully something that's already been in pool, a bitmap from the pool. There's some disk transformation in there as well. We have to write it to disk and pull it off.
Yeah.
And then eventually it gets delivered to an image view that's just sitting there waiting for it with some sort of a loading indicator. We transition from the loading indicator to the ready bitmap, and that's kind of it.
Okay. How about any other internal sort of architectural things that are interesting to call out, like lifecycle things or whatever? I'm thinking in terms of like all the stuff that my team has been working on recently for architecture components, but I think your project predated all that stuff, right?
We did predate all lifecycle components. However, there is one lifecycle component that we looked at and said, this is too good not to use. And we're actually in the process of transitioning to it. There is an internal name for it. I'm not sure exactly what the external name is, but this is the one that gives you a bunch of callbacks so that you can do composition instead of having too much code in your fragments or activities.
Okay. I'm not sure which one you're referring to now, actually.
Give me a second to look it up.
I mean, there was work on fragment stuff as part of navigation error, but I don't think that's...
I think it might be it's a portion of view model.
Oh, okay.
Potentially. Right. It's either view model or live data.
View model, data. Like, I always think of us as having a life cycle component because that's how it started, and then there were separate parts of it that were separable. View model, live data, I guess another life cycle portion is separate.
Yeah, I think for the most part, it's basically a view model.
Okay.
And we've been, we've been really happy with that because traditionally we suffered from what a lot of apps suffer from, too much code in your fragments and activities.
Yep.
And then you go and you want to change something or you have things kind of spaghetti together in a way that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
So we're starting to do this refactor and wow, it just looks so much better now.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier for new team members to come on and navigate the code. Right. Having it structured that way.
That was one of the selling points for us trying to solve some of these problems, not specific to that one, but just sort of architectural problems in general, that we got this feedback that, you know, we had previously stepped away from having any opinion on this stuff.
Yeah.
And advanced developers that didn't have a problem with these things anymore said it's a problem for their teams because then they would have someone new join the team,
right,
and they didn't know where to put stuff or they didn't know where to even find stuff because there was no clear defined architecture. Mm-hmm. And if everybody can get sort of the same mental model of how an application works or how Android stuff works in general, then they speak a common language.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
We also found that it's already paid off in terms of bugs, because what we had previously is you'd make a change that seemed really innocuous. Mm-hmm. You'd, something in a fragment, unregister or register for something, and it accidentally broke something completely unrelated.
Yeah.
But view models has helped us kind of encapsulate things a lot better. And the scope of changes that are being made are just a lot less risky.
Right. Cool. Yay.
Yeah.
Yay, win.
Success story.
I was going to ask something unrelated, which is not specifically about Android, but I'm always curious in feeds like this where you are automatically pulling out, you know, there's not a, you know, helpline on the back figuring out what image goes with what what news, what content. So
sure.
as I scroll through the feed, most of the time the images or video is on point. Mm-hmm. Occasionally there's something like, they might have gotten that, not from an ad, but like, you know, side content that happened to be yeah. on the same page or whatever. But how do you know? Do you get involved in how those things are linked?
Yeah, a little bit. So a lot of it does come from the search index. And this is what, you know, any publisher can say, can specify, I want this image to be associated as a primary image for a given article. So
okay.
we're not doing anything too smart.
Okay. So there is a way to opt into that and you rely on that. And then if that's not there, you try something else that happens to be on the page anyway. Some of the content, as
yeah.
you pointed out, comes in as just text.
Right.
In
yeah.
which case, there wasn't anything associated with the feed with it.
Yeah, sometimes this, you know, scraping, and there's a lot of search logic that goes behind this, so I'm not going to be able to be super knowledgeable about it. But yeah, sometimes the scraping just isn't able to pull out what we think is any image, let alone a good image for the page.
Yeah.
And in that case, we'd prefer not to put the image in front of the user and say, you know, really, the headline and the little abstract that we can provide you at the feed level is enough for you to decide whether or not you want to read the article or not.
Right.
And that's really what the feed is about, is, you know, it's a hub and spoke model. Let's get you into the piece of content that you want to read the most. Or if you just want to scan headlines, then let's make that a really pleasurable experience as well.
Right. It's pretty much my model.
Yeah.
It's about all I feel I have time for. Let's see what's going on in the world that I'm really frightened about. And then close it out. Okay, I think that was most that was on my mind. Did we miss anything major that you wanted to talk about in the app?
You know, there's a couple things that we also, as we were building this, that I was thinking back on that seemed to pay off, and I can mention a couple of those.
Sure.
If you want. So one was the startup latency of the app. We made really great strides going from newsstand to the new app.
Yeah.
And I think from Google News, which was a very fast, or I'm sorry, News and Weather, which was a very fast app to begin with, to the new product. And again, SysTrace was there to save the day.
Yeah.
So generally how we did it is we instrumented all of the really interesting parts of the app from when you tap on the launcher icon, and generally one of the first callbacks you get is in the applications on Create. But from that point all the way to we have rendered a new feed.
Okay.
So this is, it takes, you know, if I were to go and kill the app, cold start, and then tap on the icon again,
whoa.
You see a little bit of a splash icon, and
right.
then the content loads in pretty quickly.
It felt like maybe a second until I was actually starting to see content, and then the images are fading in after that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So we worked really, really hard to make sure that only the minimum amount of code was running from the time that you're tapping the launcher icon until we finish rendering the feed. Anything that isn't required to show you those first few headlines should not happen until we've actually rendered the feed. And that's really hard because it's very tempting to initialize lots of stuff,
yep.
the entire world if you want, in your applications on Create or in your primary activity.
Right.
So we were very careful to, you know, to instrument every little piece of code that we thought might be doing something
yep.
something wrong. And pull out anything and just delay it. And that helped tremendously.
So when you say instrument, you're talking about adding trace tags for SysTrace?
That's the one, yeah.
Okay. And then do you remove those later, or is this just in a debug build?
A little bit of both. We have some that actually just, I think, stay in there, but most of them
yeah.
do get stripped out of the
right.
Of the app for production.
Okay. I found when I was doing, a few years ago, I was doing a bunch of SysTrace stuff, probably for making inflation faster or something.
Yeah.
And the more I added, the more it started to skew the results. So there is like overhead from tags.
Yeah.
So you tend to try to avoid it in inner loops, or else you'll pay a price. But certainly just adding them in sensitive areas where they're not going to be, you know, executing in a loop.
Yeah. Yeah. 100, 200 millisecond chunks, I think, is what we were looking at for the most part.
Yeah. Interesting. So all of that work still needs to be done, but you just make sure that it happens in the background after the load, so that at least the user can see something.
Yeah, and then part of this too is the more stuff that you depend on, the more code you have,
yeah.
the more code you're accidentally running.
Yeah.
It does contribute to memory as well. So if you're on a memory constrained device, you're probably going to be GCing or otherwise incurring a penalty from
yeah.
just even loading that code. So we also try to keep our dependencies very slim.
Okay. So you mentioned memory constrained devices. What have you seen when trying to run those on low end devices?
Initially, it was not great, but we did work on that as well. And you know, if you are on a memory-constrained device, there are certain things that we omit to make the experience better.
So, wondering, like smaller images or...
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Smaller images is an easy way to reduce the memory footprint. We don't autoplay the videos just because that's a memory hog as well.
Yeah. Do you still cache the same number of views in the view pool?
Right, we dynamically adjust that based on the memory profile of the device. And there's a number of other caches where we'll kind of tune it dynamically based on what the device is telling us that it can handle.
Okay, interesting. So how did you come up with heuristics then on those devices?
So we found a nice wall, and we just started throwing stuff at it.
Sounds like software development.
Yeah, very scientific. I think in general, what we wanted to do is there were metrics for caches that we have, which is, you know, what are my cache hits, right? How big is my cache growing? And we just kind of sat there and manually tuned it until we had enough cache hits that it was still performant. The cache was still doing its job, but the cache still wasn't big enough that we were incurring enough of a memory penalty. So I think on a really low memory device, like a 512 or 1 gig RAM, you really don't want your app to be using, say, more than 40, 50 megabytes of total memory. PSS is what A2B dumpsys will give you.
Yep.
And that's roughly what we shot for, especially during app initialization.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask how you were tracking the memory. Like, is this something you actually do at runtime, or do you use like a studio tool, or it sounds like you use ADB?
Yes, ADB is the gut check, but also using it with a development build and the newest Android Studio, the new profiler that has the memory tracker with the allocations is out of this world cool.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Was like if you know the memory boundary, it would be cool to be able to see over time, like as the cache fills.
Right.
You know, how close are you getting to the possible memory?
Yes, and shout out to Tora and team, because it'll actually even show you the allocations over time.
Yes. Yeah.
And you can kind of zoom in and see, ooh, this something jumped up here. What was that? And just really precisely look at that period.
Right. They've done a good job over the last couple of years of, like, most of the Android tools. When I first saw Android pre 1.0 at some conference, one of the DevRel guys, Jason Chen, was giving a talk. And I thought they had this really rich suite of tools for these very constrained devices, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And then when I later came onto the team, you see, well, all these individual tools were like built by engineers as they needed them, which meant they were really powerful, but they all had different paradigms, and you needed to know how to run them, and they were all, you know, limited in different ways and a little bit funky.
Yeah.
Right? And one of the big pushes of Studio over the last couple of years has been to take all of these sort of one-off tools and integrate them now. So instead of Hierarchy Viewer being in its own viewer, in our own universe, we have Layout Inspector, and instead of Allocation Tracker, one of my personal favorites, like a really powerful tool to know when these things are happening that cause GCs, they have that integrated into the new memory profile. I'll give a shout out to Esteban, actually, because that's where all the profiler stuff happens.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
That's good.
Yeah, we've been blown away by how fast the tooling has accelerated, especially the past year. It feels like we get new goodies almost on a monthly basis. It's amazing.
All right. I was just sort of curious. I guess we'll probably tail off the news thing now. What else have you worked on at Google? Was it all about news? So I knew you from Newsstand. Was that where you started?
That was actually the first project that I worked on here at Google.
All right.
Before that, I worked at a small startup that nobody in the world knows because it was so small, but near and dear to my heart. It was called SpringPad, and I did some Android development there as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all Android all the time.
Lots of Android, yeah.
Anything else you wanted to bring up that we didn't cover?
I don't think so. You know, a lot of what went into building this product was that I think I'd recommend to other Android developers is try to be involved as early as you can in the product development cycle, because the more Android specific things you can do and the more Android specific decisions that you make early on, the more it'll pay off, and the better the app will feel specifically on the Android platform.
So when you say be involved in the product development cycle, like what exactly do you mean by that then?
Well, I could give you an example of something that I think wouldn't work well.
Yeah.
If you have a product team, whether maybe it's a product manager and some designers, they go off and design a really great app, something that just looks amazing. but they're not thinking of specific platforms that it's going to be on, you're not going to be able to optimize it in a way that you would have if you were really thinking about those primitives from the very start.
Okay.
So you don't want to be, as an Android, you don't want to, as any developer, right, you don't want to just get kind of this waterfall of things to build.
Yes.
Okay. That's a recipe for disaster, in my opinion.
Right. So this is what we were talking about earlier with the iteration with design, so that you could feedback the constraints around consistent image sizes or whatever, so that they can take that into account.
Yeah. And even beyond that too, you know, how can you integrate in meaningful ways with the system APIs? Every year, in fact, multiple times a year, there's new APIs on Android and in the support library. How can you best take advantage of those so that the app really feels like it is the best that it can be on the Android platform? And so we think about these things from the very start.
Right. Great.
Cool.
Thanks.
Thanks for your time.